I started this series a couple of months ago when I realized, looking at the yamas of Hinduism, which are the basic teachings of Hinduism, which there's the yamas, the niyamas, there's hundreds. What happens is you typically have a spiritual teacher like Buddha or Jesus or Muhammad, and they come along and they teach, and then what happens is a lot of people teach on top of their teachings. And that's why you end up with lots and lots of rules. In fact, in the book of Leviticus in the Old Testament, if you read it, there are 613 things that a good Jew is supposed to do every single day. Let me say that again. 613 things. I think the idea is to basically keep you so busy you never do anything bad. If you look at religion, all religions are based in ethics, one form or the other. There's basically two different types of religion. This is what we've been talking about. There's theocratic and there's karmic. Theocratic religions tend to be Christianity, Judaism, Islam. They believe basically that if you do not live in an ethical fashion, then God will get you. That's just the way theocratic religions work. Karmic religions believe that if you do not live in an ethical way, life will get you. But either way, you're going to get got. So one of the best things we can do is to live in an ethical way, not necessarily just so that we can get along with other people, but if you look at all of this, I mean, you've got four of the world's major religions, 51% of the people on the planet adhere to one of these top religions, and every one of them has five basic teachings that are the same from religion to religion. And that's what we've been talking about. Let's see if anybody remembers. Anybody remember the first four? Anybody want to comment on some of the common teachings? If we look at it from the Old Testament, let's do it from that perspective. Thou shalt not kill. What else? Lie. That's actually not in the Old Testament, but it's thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. So we did lump that together, okay? What else? Steal. Yep, okay. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not lie. Thou shalt not kill. And then last time I spoke, we spoke about the only one that is something that you're supposed to do with your mind as opposed to not do with your body. Anybody remember? Covet. That's exactly right. So now we're finally up to the fifth of the five. Now the interesting thing about this one is I'm very uncomfortable talking about it. After 20 years of speaking in various churches and spiritual centers, I've realized there's some things in the Bible you don't talk about in church. Take that in for a second. So what we're going to talk about that is common to all of the five religions is appropriate sexuality. That is common to all five of these religions. All four of these religions. Appropriate sexuality. Now I have to tell you, see, it sitting here and even just saying the word sexuality in front of a bunch of people is an uncomfortable thing because we live in a culture that is descendant from Puritans. And as W.H. Mencken said, a Puritan is somebody who lives in constant fear that somebody somewhere is having fun. And as Woody Allen said, sex is about the most fun you can have without laughing. So that's what I'm going to be talking about today is appropriate sexuality. And one of my favorite jokes is that Moses comes down from Mount Sinai and he's got the two tablets and he looks at the Israelites and he says, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is I got him down to 10. The bad news is adultery's still in. So I got to say, I don't know, I how many of y'all have watched How I Met Your Mother? You like that show? I think that's a cute show. In there, when they are supposedly indulging in an herbal substance that a lot of people did in college, they called it eating a big sandwich. So we took a hit off that big sandwich. So I got to say, I feel uncomfortable talking about sex. So I'm going to use the euphemism disco dancing, okay? So whenever I say disco dancing, it's up to you to translate, okay? You know, it's interesting because most religions are so conflicted over disco dancing. Most of them preach abstinence, at least today, and many of them admonish their followers to not use anything to prevent future generations But that was originally done as a way of increasing the sheer numbers of that particular faith. True or false? True or false? Catholic priests are allowed to marry. True or false? Before the 11th century, it was true. Catholic priests were allowed to marry and they were allowed to have children. The problem was people were leaving their estates to the priests themselves instead of to the church. The priests then, because they had legal progeny, children, as a result of disco dancing, they then left the estates to their children, and the church never got it. So the church, the Catholic Church, in the 11th century passed a law that priests had to be celibate, henceforth, because then they had no legal progeny, and therefore they had no legal claim to anything as far as ownership, because everything they owned was supposed to be given to the church. There's a story of one of the popes dying and going to heaven, and St. Peter says, "You were such a wonderful spiritual leader when you were alive. Is there anything you would like?" And he said, "I would like to read the scriptures in the original Greek and the original Aramaic." And so they allowed this. So for days, this pope sat and he read the Greek and the Aramaic, the original writings of what ultimately became the Bible. And then one day they hear this pope shriek. And all of the heavenly angels come running to where he is, and he's screaming, "They left out the R, they left out the R." And everybody says, "What?" He says, "It says celebrate." I'll wait, y'all catch up. Disco dancing is a basic biological function. It is something that everyone does. And yet it is associated with shame and guilt. A lot of religions will have you believe that disco dancing is the original sin. Read the Old Testament. It is not. Judgment is the original sin. And boy, do we have judgments about ourselves and about others on their disco dancing. We act like this should somehow be something that is quiet and kept aside, and yet all major religions talk about it as a challenge. We sweep it under the doorstep. Every time I drive here, I covet. You know why? Because I see all these signs that say Google Fiber in this neighborhood. And I don't get it in my neighborhood. And I have to admit, that's when I find myself coveting. But I've discovered a way that I don't need Google Fiber, and that is that if everybody else would stop watching videos about disco dancing, the bandwidth would be freed up 30%. Now, if you think I'm making a joke, you go look at the Huffington Post article that says that 30% of internet bandwidth is used for videos about disco dancing. If you read the Google way, you will find that one out of every four searches, and there are over 3 billion searches on Google every day, one out of every four, disco dancing. That's exactly right. Seventy percent of all men watch movies about disco dancing on the internet, and 30% of all women watch movies about disco dancing on the internet. So what's the big deal? I mean, it seems like it ought to be just like natural. It's okay. It's perfectly fine. And by the way, original sin is what? Judgment. It's not? So when I talk about disco dancing, you are not going to hear any judgment coming from me. Because I don't have any. And yet I look at this and I wonder if maybe there's another way of looking at it. And why is it that all four of these religions have set such important reasons as to why we should not do this? What's interesting is that most people look at films, most men especially, look at movies about disco dancing. And also, according to statistically, almost the same number of men dance with partners that they're not married to, shall I say. And as you look at the statistics for women watching movies about disco dancing, it's about the same number of women who, let's say, dance off their dance card a little bit. Is Nancy here? I haven't seen her today. No. I want to tell you something about Nancy. No, God, I'm not talking about Nancy. Oh, come on. Nancy Schneider is from China. Nancy Schneider is, like everybody that I've known, pretty much from China. She's pretty thin compared to most of us Americans. And I spent a lot of time in China, and I've asked Nancy, why is that? She said, because in China, we don't have a diet industry. In America, we have a diet industry, always keeping us thinking about our food and what we should eat and what we shouldn't eat. And it's always on our minds. And as a result, we're always obsessing about food. In China, you eat when you're hungry, you stop when you're done, that's it, no stress, very little obesity. I wonder if somehow this constant obsession with disco dancing is what's causing people to look outside of where they are and possibly dance with other partners. I don't know. It certainly seems to be indicative. An article in Men's Health magazine said that was true. And this isn't new, by the way. Raise your hand if you saw the movie The Ten Commandments. Let's see if anyone doesn't raise their hand. This ought to be fun. Do you remember when Moses went up on Mount Sinai? While he was up on Mount Sinai, they took their rings and their earrings and they melted them down and they made a golden calf. That's Baal. That was a representation of the god Baal. B-A-A-L. That's the Canaanites' god. When you read the Old Testament and you hear about the Israelites versus the Canaanites, it was always like kind of a high school or college rivalry back and forth, except these people killed each other constantly. And it was over whose god was the preferable one. And the Canaanites believed in the god Baal, and they believed that it rained when Baal disco danced. And the way to get Baal to disco dance was for you to disco dance at church. Hence the term temple prostitute. They actually had temple prostitutes. By the way, in case anyone's anxious, we asked all children not to be in here today. They had temple prostitutes, and they truly believed that by doing this, it would excite Baal, and as a result, there would be rain. Now, I can imagine being an Israelite where I said, you really should come and join our religion. Well, I'm looking at Baal. Now, Baal says I should go over here and disco dance with everybody I want to, and even in church, and you're telling me I need to be circumcised. Somehow I think they got the better deal. And yet somehow, here we are. The Bible says, thou shalt not commit adultery. In the Old Testament, 5,000 years ago, thou shalt not commit adultery. And what I've been doing is counterpointing what Jesus Christ said in the Sermon on the Mount. They said, you shall not commit adultery. Let me just explain something to us, to some of you who may not know this. We today don't get Jesus Christ. We don't understand the cultural context in which he spoke. And so we read things and we think, oh, I get it. But we don't, because it was a very different time. Matthew 5:27-28, Jesus says, ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. So we look at this and we go, wow, my thoughts are as important and as significant as my actions, right? That's what Jesus is saying here, right? Wrong. Secondary point. Major point is, now imagine, he's sitting there and supposedly there are 5,000 men, oh, and a bunch of women and children because they don't count, according to the Bible, listening to Jesus speak, and he says, whoever looketh on a woman with lust in her heart. That's the punchline, y'all. Jesus is saying that men can commit adultery. Prior to that, men could not commit adultery. It was an impossibility. Men could have as many wives and as many concubines as they want. Look at the Bible. Who's getting stoned for committing adultery every single time? Male or female? women. That's because men literally could not commit adultery. And then Jesus comes along and says, men can too. Can you imagine 5,000 men going, you had me up till that point, dude, but you just lost me. But that is the boldness and the wonder of what Jesus as a speaker was saying, is that human beings, male and female, are equal in every aspect and in every way. Anyone who has lusted after a woman in his mind has committed sin. Anybody remember when Jimmy Carter did an interview for Playboy back in the 80s? He admitted to breaking this commandment, didn't he? And what did everybody point out after he had done this long interview? This was the one thing everybody was talking about, that Jimmy Carter admitted having lustful thoughts in his mind. Do you know why everybody freaked out? Because it was the first time in history that a politician has ever told the truth. And nobody knew what to do with it. Man, religion is conflicted when it comes to disco dancing. Here's what Buddhism says. Buddhism says that I undertake the training rule to avoid sexual misconduct. Remember, in Buddhism, it's never a commandment. It's a training rule. I undertake the training rule. I'm in training. You're always in training with Buddhism, which is good. I undertake the training rule not to engage in sexual misconduct. The Buddha himself said that all priests had to be celibate. And yet, the largest sect of Buddhism, which is called Gelug, which His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, is a part of, believes that disco dancing yoga, as they call it, as an actual physical practice, is the only way to attain enlightenment in one lifetime. So Buddhism believes that it's a great way to attain enlightenment. Maybe that's why people scream out names of deities as they're practicing this. I don't know. Do you know in other cultures, other societies, this wouldn't be the least bit uncomfortable? This would be like, yeah, you wouldn't even need to have this conversation. But it's amazing how we are. We are so obsessed with disco dancing in our culture because it is so put down in our culture. It is so diminished. It's the same as what I was saying about Nancy and the diet industry in China. There's no diet industry, and therefore people aren't obsessed about it. Here, we're like, it's wrong, it's evil, it's dirty, but look at that hot woman on the cover of Sports Illustrated. We're as conflicted as the religions themselves. Hinduism isn't conflicted. Hinduism gave us the Kama Sutra. Hinduism says that the proper exploration of our own disco dancing is a way to connect with ourselves and to connect with God as well. I was 9 years old when my dad told me about disco dancing. And he did the normal thing. When a man and a woman love each other and blah, 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 and it's the most beautiful, most natural thing, etc. But from that point, don't talk about it, etc. Hinduism has over 25,000 gods, and almost every one of them has a girlfriend or a boyfriend. What was the big thing about the Da Vinci Code? It wasn't all the other stuff in the Da Vinci Code. It was Jesus married? Oh my God, was Jesus married? Maybe he even disco danced. With religions as conflicted as they are about this particular subject, I don't see how I can really advise you other than to look at the word appropriate. Almost all of them say appropriate sexuality. The word appropriate means suitable for a particular person, place, or condition. Let me say that again. Suitable for a particular person, place, or condition. If it's right for you and it's right for the other person, it's right. It's right. Do you know it was inappropriate for there to be gays and lesbians before 1864 because there weren't any? What are you laughing about? Well, it was in 1864 that a German social scientist named Karl Ulrich discovered that there was a separate class of people known as homosexuals. Prior to that, they simply believed that homosexuals were heterosexuals, being inappropriate. But for a homosexual to have sex with somebody of the same sex, that's perfectly appropriate. It's perfectly natural. So appropriate and based in love. Let me say that again. Based in love. I know it sounds kind of old school to hear me say that, but why not have our sexuality based in love? Shouldn't our jobs be based in love? Shouldn't our parenting be based in love? Shouldn't our giving be based in love? Shouldn't how we live be based in love? Simply by basing it in love and making a commitment to hurt no one, and that includes ourselves, and sometimes our future selves. People, especially when they're younger, make decisions that later on they're like, man, that was not a good idea. And the best thing we can do is to love our future selves enough to always be thinking of your future self and say, am I acting in a way that is showing myself the greatest love so that I can then share that great love with everyone else? Being appropriate, being loving, and understanding is nothing to be ashamed of. It's normal. It's human. It's the most fun you can have without laughing. Take somebody's hand. Let's close in prayer. Dear God, we celebrate the physical act of love, knowing that people have been conflicted about it throughout time, and that religion has done its best to help us contextualize this in an ethical fashion. And yet we are reminded of the words of Wayne Dyer, and that is that people with ethics don't need external ethics. And so we open ourselves and our hearts to live in that which is appropriate and to always share love. Thank you, God, and so it is.
Thank you for listening. I hope you find this to be a blessing in your life. If you do, be sure and podcast these broadcasts. That is, set your device, your phone, your iPad, your computer to automatically receive these. You can do it through iTunes or you can do it through podbean.com. Go to willbowen.podbean.com and subscribe. Have a great week. I look forward to talking to you real soon. You can connect with me at will@willbowen.com. Have a great day. Bye-bye.